Terrence Taylor is a former United Nations weapons inspector who now heads the International Institute for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. Mr. Taylor joins us from his office. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And do you know anything about this storage area where they found the empty chemical warheads?
Well, yes, from the reports I've seen, these are 11 and maybe 12 122-millimeter rockets, mm-hmm. which can be designed to take high explosive or other warheads like biological or chemical weapons. And from the reports I've seen, it seems that these were specifically designed to accept chemical weapons warheads.
Should they have been on the declaration that Iraq made?
Well, they shouldn't be in the possession of Iraq at all. All of these weapons, whether filled or unfilled, should have been destroyed by now. But I think the important point as background to this particular issue, although this seems like a small number of 11 or 12 weapons, there are many thousands of these types of weapons which remain unaccounted for. And that's one of the points that Dr. Hans Blix, the head of the UN Monitoring and Verification Inspection Commission, is complaining about in terms of saying, well, Iraq is not fully cooperating unless they clear up these big outstanding issues, of which this is one.
Mr. Taylor, is it possible that these were, in fact, empty shells that at one point had been filled with something noxious, and that the bureaucracy of the Iraqi military and scientific establishment is not noticeably better than a lot of other bureaucracies, and that they just got left somewhere and forgotten?
My view on this is that they probably were unfilled and never filled. The Iraqis had thousands of unfilled chemical warheads. Some of them are filled. Once you fill them, there's a certain shelf life problem with the storage of these mm-hmm. things that's a little bit shorter. But in this particular case, I think they were unused weapons which were imported into Iraq in the 1980s, along with many thousands of others, and stored. In this particular case, they were found in or next to a new bunker, a bunker that had been constructed in the late 1990s. So this is not just something forgotten and left in a corner, it seems to me. That would be not a credible explanation.
Mr. Taylor, let me get you to theorize at a distance, it must be said, over the significance of the visits that some inspectors made to the homes of a couple of Iraqi scientists this week. And they seem to be looking into a man-made mound just outside of Baghdad. Do you have any idea what they were looking for?
Well, I've no idea specifically what mm-hmm. they are looking for, but they would be looking for documents, materiel that might be related to, in that case, a nuclear weapons program, but more likely documents. And clearly the Iraqis have had plenty of warning that the inspectors might at some point call on the private homes of these kinds of people, and trying to spirit away the documents at short notice, maybe burying them. Mm-hmm. I know that in my own case, when I was inspecting in the 1990s, I intercepted an Iraqi scientist trying to smuggle a document out of the building I was inspecting. So inspectors have to be alert to this kind of activity and be suspicious.
Do you feel the inspectors need weeks, days, months more to complete their task?
Well, if the Iraqis do not cooperate fully, which they are not at the moment, that is to say, coming forward and declaring and showing and telling about their mm-hmm. weapons of mass destruction program, it could take years. We must bear in mind that in the 1990s, against an Iraqi concealment plan and against Iraqi denials, it took us years to uncover these programs. In the case of the biological weapons program, it took a large team of people 4.5 years to produce the irrefutable evidence that Iraq had a hidden biological weapons program. So this is the kind of background we're up against. And we must remember the Iraqis learned a lot of lessons from the 1990s. So I think Dr. Blix's inspectors have an even more difficult task than we had.
So far as we know, no Iraqi scientists have allowed themselves to be interviewed alone. Do you think that's going to happen, and will it make any difference?
Well, it might happen. I don't think it's a high likelihood. Mm-hmm. I always thought that this particular provision, while it's useful, and if it can be exploited, fine, but it shouldn't be the leading edge of any inquiry into Iraqi weapons of mass destruction programs, because obviously it has to be voluntary. You have to have the right people that are going to come forward, and you won't necessarily get that. And it's a very, if you like, public form of defection. That's what it effectively is. So I think this is a very difficult area, and I know Dr. Blix from previous statements statements, I think, has some misgivings about it, but it could be useful because you never know when someone might come forward, but certainly not a primary means of investigation, in my view.
Last time we spoke with you, you talked about the fact that there was investigation that needed to go on outside of Iraq. Some of the companies that have perhaps been suppliers to the Iraqi regime needed to make a clean breast of what they had possibly supplied so that their inventory, the inventory of what they delivered, could be matched against what was received or destroyed. Are you in any position to read whether or not that's going on now?
I believe it is. I think one of the issues, for example, the allegations that Iraq imported aluminium tubes, which might have been used for their uranium enrichment program. I think the information on these particular tubes and where they came from and the follow-up that the inspectors have done, in this case from the International Atomic Energy Agency, was done with the assistance of companies that might possibly have exported this material. And certainly, I think checking flows of materiel into Iraq is something the inspectors ought to be doing, and I suspect they probably are in a number of countries around the world.
Somebody emailed a question to me, which I want to share with you. Can the inspectors genuinely expect to discover anything if they travel in white vehicles and their UN flags flapping and there are reporters trailing? And I mean, how unexpected and spontaneous and unsupervised, really, can these inspections be?
Well, you have to be very imaginative to create surprise. Certainly, of course, they have to wear all their accoutrements to show that they are UN inspectors, blue caps, white vehicles, clearly marked by, which is their protection. But there are a number of ways you can create surprise, because when you drive out of the gates of your compound, wherever that might be, in Baghdad or Mosul, your accompanying escorts, which you also need to get through the traffic and do all the things and to deal with any local situations, they don't know where you're going, and you conceal that until the last possible moment.
Mr. Taylor, thanks very much.
It's my pleasure.
Terence Taylor, former weapons inspector for the United Nations Special Commission, who now heads the International Institute for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C. ¶¶